Yes. Fine.
Okay, fine. Who's the newsreader today, Dan?
Great.
Hi, Lauren. Nice. It's Mary.
Hopefully.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I'll be seeing you up there tomorrow.
Probably, yeah. We've got some fascinating things lined up for you.
Have you? Does it involve having to wear scrubs? I hope it does.
It probably does, yeah. For part of it, at least, yeah.
Excellent. Brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it, Lauren. Yeah.
Jim says, Jim Healy, the camera, says he hopes you wear having to wear a nurse's uniform.
You see, I might contact HR about that, tell him, Lauren.
Yeah.
I might be forced to.
Thank you, Lauren.
Okay.
Sorry, I was just getting the one camera. That was a bad start. Four. Okay, sorry. Coming up on the programme, a graduate forced to work for her benefits wins her case against the government's back-to-work scheme. The parents accused in court of planning to start a fire which killed their six children. And the pain of losing James, 20 years since he was lured to his death after the break. I can change my own font. I know, well, and there's plenty, I'm rubbish at as well, but I can mask the old font. Thank God. But my eyesight's so rubbish, I've got it on size 22, if you're over here.
I can't get better anymore. I can just try and maintain how I am.
Coming up on the programme, a graduate forced to work for her benefits wins her case against the government's back-to-work scheme. The most fantastic programme. A graduate forced to work at Poundland for her benefits wins a landmark appeal. Kate Riley was backed by judges who ruled the government's back-to-work programme breached the law. Ministers insist the scheme is here to stay. Also this lunchtime in court, the parents accused of planning the fire that killed their six children. International anger as North Korea confirms it carried out another nuclear test. And a heart patient waiting for the gift of life.
I can't get better anymore. I can just try and maintain how I am.
This is ITV News with Mary Nightingale.
Deliberately, in the bong. Well, that's what it says on my script, Laura, love. That may have been... Is that wrong? That's obviously wrong. Okay. Well, can we check it? It's not that on BDL. Can we just check it back, Dan? Because coming up in the programme, a graduate forced to work for her benefits wins her case against the government's back-to-work scheme. The parents accused in court of planning to start a fire which killed... Coming up in the programme, a graduate forced to work for her benefits wins her case against the government's back-to-work scheme. The parents accused in court of planning to start a fire which killed their six children, and the pain of losing James, 20 years since he was lured to his death after the break. Law. Ministers insist the scheme is here to stay. Also this lunchtime in court, the parents accused of planning the fire that killed their six children. What's the question? I'll just write it in. I put in a second question for Laura about is this going to cost money? And the answer is, I don't know, but it's the question everyone's going to ask. Laura's just going to say, I don't know. Yeah, she said, I didn't realise she was here, but yeah. Just, Laura's happy, I'm happy. We want you to be happy. You, Laura Holgate, we want you to be happy. Laura Koonsberg's happy, I'm happy, but your happiness is important to us. Dan, sorry, when you've got a minute.
I'll be talking about this sort of level, about what happened here. It sounds a little better for you.
A graduate forced to work at Poundland for her benefits wins a landmark appeal. Kate Riley was backed by judges who ruled the government's back-to-work programme breached the law. Ministers insist the scheme is here to stay. Also this lunchtime in court, the parents accused of planning the fire that killed their six children. International anger as North Korea confirms it carried out another nuclear test. And a heart patient waiting for the gift of life.
I can't get better anymore. I can just try and maintain how I am.
This is ITV News with Mary Nightingale.
Good afternoon. A graduate who was forced to work at a pound store or lose her job seeker's allowance has won her appeal against the government. Judges rule that the regulations under which most of the back-to-work schemes were created are unlawful. Now, ministers insist the programme is here to stay, but the ruling could mean that those who refused to take part in the past could now reclaim their benefits. Richard Pallow reports.
You ain't right, sir! You will shut you down!
2.5 million of us are currently without a job. Thanks to the tenacity of just this one graduate, no one claiming unemployment benefit will be forced into unpaid labour. For now, anyhow. The government's flagship scheme is in effect.
I hope the government will now take this opportunity to rethink its strategy and do something which actually builds on unemployed people's skills and tackles the causes of long-term unemployment. I agree we need to get people back to work, but the best way of doing that is by helping them, not punishing them.
All those people who have been stripped of their benefits under the affected scheme have a right to claim their money back. And until new regulations are enacted with proper parliamentary approval, nobody can be compelled to participate on the scheme.
Kate argued that her enforced placement at Poundland was illegal, did nothing to help find a job in her chosen sector. Yet although the Court of Appeal found in favour of her and others in such unpaid leave, it was because of technicality and crucially not because of any breach in human rights. And if you think the coalition will be easing off after this, well, think again.
The Court's been very clear. This is not forced labour. It's not slave labour. It's dismissed what Kate Riley has been claiming all the time. And I think it's an endorsement approach the government has adopted to make sure we give people the support that they need to get into work. And if they don't take up that support, that we actually sanction them and they lose their benefits.
With her CV now reading, I defeated the government, Kate's search for full-time employment may gain impetus, and so many more like her are left wondering this lunchtime if the respite from working for free is only temporary. Richard Palace, ITV.
Well, this is Senator Delora Koonsberg joins me now. This is pretty embarrassing, isn't it, for the government?
It certainly is embarrassing for them, no doubt about that. They say they will appeal the decision, and they are sounding quite confident that the implications of this ruling, which sounds like they could be enormous, will in reality be quite limited. But I have to say there's a lot of uncertainty about what this will actually mean yet. Importantly, the judgment did not say that the idea of making people work for their benefits is wrong. The judges are quite clear about that. The problem was with it, the way that the rules were written. They say the rules were written wrongly and they were wrongly applied in these two cases that were looked at in court. So, as ever, at the moment, we've got two groups of lawyers saying different things. No doubt, though, about two things. One, it's embarrassing for the government. This is a huge priority for them, getting welfare to work to function properly. And secondly, if you are one of the increasing numbers of people who are on this scheme, do not feel confident today that you can somehow walk away and it'll all be fine. Do not be confident that you can get benefits back if you don't feel like taking part.
That's probably SMC. Are you hearing the programme okay?
But the government has to work a lot harder to make it function properly.
Okay, Laura, thank you. Now, the court has heard how a house fire which killed 6 children was planned by their parents. The trial of Michael and Mairead Philpott began today, and the jury was told the fatal blaze at their home in Derby was started as part of a plan that went horribly wrong. Neil Connolly reports.
Mick and Mairead Philpott arrived at Nottingham Crown Court this morning in police vans at the start of...
Hello, Romilly. Romilly. Excuse me, Romilly.
The couple, along with a third defendant, 46...
Pass your hands down, Romilly. Thank you.
6 separate counts of manslaughter, all denied the charges. The couple are accused of killing their 6 children in a house fire as part of a plan that went horribly wrong. Jade, who was 10, her brothers John, Jack, Jesse, Jaden and Dwayne all perished after the fire which engulfed their home. They slept in their bed. The fire caused extensive damage to the 3-bedroom semi-detached home in Derby in May last year. The family had an unconventional lifestyle. Mick Philpott and his wife Mairead also shared the house with his 28-year-old mistress Lisa Willis. The 3 defendants listened as the prosecutor, Richard Latham QC, told the jury they had to decide if the fire was an inside job or was started by someone else. He said the fire was no accident. It had been started using petrol in the hallway of the house. Plans of the home where the Philpotts lived were also shown to the jury. The jury were told they were trying and would ultimately decide the verdict of the case on evidence that the actions of the defendants were unlawful because starting the fire with the children in the house would put them at substantial risk. Neil Connery, ITV News.
Well, Rupert Evelyn is at Nottingham Crown Court right now. Now, Rupert, the court was placed a 999 call this morning.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Just before they broke for lunch, the prosecutor explained to the jury that what they were about to hear reflected both the distress and the panic of what happened that night. He said it was obvious, listening to the call, that the fire was totally out of hand. And then they played the 8-minute emergency call. It was made from Mick's phone. And as it began, Mick Philpott in the dock stood up and he cried that he didn't want to be
listened to it. He was restrained by the security guards. He sat down and put his head in his hands. His wife, Mairead, also sitting in the dock, motionless, but occasionally weeping, putting her hand to her eye. As in the background, you heard the panic screams of what was going on in Victory Road that night, a fire that was clearly out of control as we listened to the audio. It was a harrowing moment for the court as they relived the final moment of six children's lives.
Robert Eaglin and Nottingham, thank you. Crisis talk between the government and the food industry about the horse meat scandal will take place this evening. It all comes as ministers come under increasing pressure to restore public confidence in their handling of the incident. And our political correspondent Libby Beener is at Westminster. Now, Libby, this was discussed at Cabinet this morning. Are there any concerns there about the Environment Secretary's performance throughout all of this?
Well, if there are any concerns, they weren't apparently expressed publicly. The Prime Minister's spokesman was asked this morning by journalists whether any other Cabinet members were at all worried about how Mr. Paterson was doing, and he said that no one, it was unanimous that he was doing the right thing. Having said that, the Prime Minister's spokesman went on to say that at the end of this crisis, there would have to be what he called a lessons learned experiment, where the government and members of the food industry got together and looked exactly at what had gone on. He was asked whether this was a failure of regulation. He categorically denied that, insisting it was really up to the food industry to put its own house in order.
And Libby, what about these talks tonight? What, if anything, is likely to come out of them?
Well, I think Owen Paterson will once again be reiterating the need for meat suppliers and supermarkets to try and make sure that the meat they are selling is what it says it is and isn't contaminated with horse meat or indeed other meats. I think the emphasis very much is on checks being made by the industry, but the first results of tests won't be known until Friday, and I think until then, consumer confidence will continue to dive.
OK, Libby Beener at Westminster, thank you. Now, plans for regulating the press in the wake of the phone hacking scandal will be unveiled by the Conservative a little later today. November, Lord Leveson's report into press standards recommended that an independent watchdog be set up, supported by law. But today's proposals are expected to include a royal charter, not backed by legislation, in a bid to retain the freedom of the press. In just under half an hour's time, the UN will hold an emergency meeting following North Korea's latest nuclear test. The reclusive communist nation confirmed it has successfully detonated a nuclear device, despite international orders to stop building atomic weapons. The Foreign Secretary said the impact of further sanctions depends on China's support. From Beijing, Angus Walker, our China correspondent, reports.
After days of defiant threat, a patriotic broadcast, confirmation from North Korea of what it called a safe and perfect underground nuclear test, carried out at a secret site, a remote frozen valley in a country still trapped in the Cold War. The blast picked up by earthquake detectors in Japan, the shockwave causing a chain of condemnation. From the streets of South Korea, demands for an international response.
Now it is time to demonstrate that if North Korea continues in this way, it will face increasing isolation and increasing pressure from all of the members of the Security Council. I hope that will be very clear at the meeting that will be held in New York today.
North Korea recently successfully launched a long-range rocket. Today it claims it tested a smaller nuclear device, building a warhead, clearly the aim, and the target, America. In a bizarre video released by North Korea a few days ago, an astronaut dreams of a U.S. city destroyed by nuclear war.
In the days leading up to the nuclear test, the U.S. Embassy here in Beijing has been at the center of diplomatic negotiations. The White House sending a special envoy to urge the Chinese leadership to back tougher sanctions against North Korea.
Only Chinese officials get the bear hug treatment from Kim Jong-un, but today Beijing summoned the North Korean ambassador to express strong dissatisfaction. While millions are being spent on nuclear weapons, millions of people struggle to survive in North Korea. The regime, propped up by China, which, despite all the condemnation, will never allow the collapse of its communist allies. Angus Walker, ITV News, Beijing.
The latest from Rome on the Pope's shock resignation. And the pain of losing James, 20 years since the toddler was lured to his death. All this week on ITV, we are bringing you stories from the heart as we highlight the desperate need for more organ donors right across Britain. Well, today we're looking at those waiting for a transplant. Now, currently, there are 193 people needing a heart transplant here in the UK. On average, those people will wait around 250 days for a suitable donor. And during that time, 25 of those patients will die before a transplant takes place. Well, our medical editor, Lawrence McGinty, is at Tapworth Hospital right now, and it's Britain's leading heart and lung transplant centre. Now, Lawrence, obviously these figures speak themselves, but that's not the whole story, is it? What is life like for the people who are actually waiting for transplants?
Well, Mary, one group of patients on the waiting list here at Tapworth are people waiting not just for a heart, but for a heart-lung transplant. And some of those have cystic fibrosis, a genetic inherited disease, which gradually means that your breathing becomes more and more difficult and your lungs fill up. And I'm here with one of those patients, with Bernice. Bernice is in hospital currently because you've got an infection, haven't you? Yeah. That's why you've got the drip here. Yeah. Yeah. What's it like having cystic fibrosis? What does it do to you?
It's very tiring. It's a lot of hard work, lots of medication, lots of physio. Breathing itself is very difficult and very tiring. Coughing a lot.
And you've got oxygen now?
Yeah, I've got oxygen to help, yeah.
Yeah. There are other things that can help, can't you? This machine here next to you, what does this do? Can you?
That helps with my physiotherapy. I have it, it shoots air into my lungs, which opens up the airways, it moves my mucus around, which is easy to bring up.
And you have to have a special diet. Can you explain that? Because that surprised me.
Due to the amount of infections I have, it's hard for me to put on weight. And my calorie intake would be around 4,000 a day. But because of the infections, it's hard for me to feel hungry and hard for me to eat. So I have an overnight feed, which is a tube that goes into my stomach, which gives me 2,000 a day, which helps steady the weight out.
And that's because it's so difficult for you to breathe that you burn up a lot of calories just breathing.
Yeah, just breathing and coughing takes up a lot of energy.
And you've been on the waiting list now for how long?
4 months.
What was it like when you found out you were getting on the waiting list?
I was frankly quite excited because I thought this could be an opportunity for me to have my second chance, for me to be able to do things that normal 21-year-olds should be doing. So I was quite excited.
And how do you feel, because there aren't enough organs in given, are there?
No, it's quite upsetting because I have lost quite a few friends due to not being enough organs. With this week could help completely. So many more people should sign up, and hopefully me and many of my friends will be able to have that second chance.
Okay, well, the best of luck, Bernice. I have to say, though, that the shortage of organs means that here at Papworth Hospital last year, they were only able to do 3 heart-lung transplants.
Right, thank you. The Vatican has revealed more details about the Pope's health in the wake of his decision to step down yesterday. It confirmed the Pontiff underwent surgery to update his pacemaker just before Christmas. The Pope Benedict XVI's resignation came as a complete surprise. That decision may have been made almost a year ago. NBC's correspondent Claudio Lavanga is in Rome and he sent this report.
Well, a day after the shocking announcement by Pope Benedict XVI that he will abdicate, well, more details are emerging about that decision. Well, the Vatican's own newspaper, the Osservatore Romano, says that that decision was taken months ago, right after his trip to Mexico and Cuba in March 2012. That's when the pontiff realized that he was too old and too weak to just perform the duties of a pontiff, including, of course, transatlantic travel. So what's going to happen now? Well, February 28th at 8 o'clock in the evening, Rome time, is going to stop being the Pope, and he won't have any more executive powers over the Catholic Church. He will then retire to the summer residence of the Popes outside of Rome, and when a new Pope is elected, hopefully right before Easter, then he will retire to a life of spirituality in a cloister convent inside Vatican City.
And that is Adia Lavanga reporting there from Rome.
Freedom.
Samar Romilly, 45 to you. 1 minute on your life, I'll give you a 10.
And it's a slash cop. It comes as the banking giant reported a decrease in pre-tax profits to £246 million in 2012, down from £5.9 billion the previous year. More than half of the redundancies are expected to be made in Asia. And G4S, the company which failed to provide enough security guards at the Olympics, has paid organisers, LOCOG, £70 million in compensation. The military and police had to step in when it emerged the firm had not recruited the promised number of staff for last summer's games. The prosecution has warned the jury to approach the evidence against Samar's ex-wife with caution as her trial draws a close. Vicky Price, they say, has given a stage-managed performance with the aim of pulling the wool over the jury's eyes. Our little correspondent Romilly Week is at Sutton Crown Court now. Romilly, what else has the prosecution been saying?
10.
Romilly Week at Sutton Crown Court. Thank you.
Thanks, Romilly. Off you.
Here's to the day since Jane Bulger was lured to his death. But for his mother, the memories and the anger towards his killers are still very much alive. Mrs. Fergus said she will never forgive John Venables and Robert Thompson and will spend the anniversary of her son's death at his grave. The Crepsia Millerini has this.
I just kept on expecting them to come running through the door. It was only after the court case I realised that I wasn't going to get them back. I think I lived a life of, you know, on hope and, you know, denial.
For Denise Burgess, the reality of what happened to her son is as raw now as it was then. On February the 12th, 1993, two-year-old James Bulger was led away from a busy shopping centre in Merseyside, tortured and then killed. For 20 years, she's kept his memory alive, and that has offered some comfort.
I suffer on about James. It would be like I've never had someone. I don't want that to happen. I did have James, even though it was for a short time. But I want my kid to know what James was like, to talk about the little things that he used to get up to, the cheeky smile he had.
His killers, John Venables and Robert Thompson, both 10 at the time, were convicted and sent to life, but then freed on license a year later. In 2010, Venables went back to prison after pleading guilty, downloading and distributing indecent images of children. Denise believes he may harm again and wants him to remain behind bars.
Thompson and Venables were let off scot-free, really. They got away with murder. Come through 20 years with the same hate. I've got the same hate in me today as what I had back then, and I think for the next 20 years, if anything, the hate could happen.
For Denise, there is no room for forgiveness. She will spend this tragic anniversary by her son's graveside. Lucrezia Minerini, ITV News.
And let's get a reminder now of our top stories. A graduate who was forced to take work at a pound store or risk losing her benefits has won a High Court appeal against the government. Judges ruled that regulations which help create back-to-work schemes are unlawful. The trial of a couple accused of planning to start a fire which killed their six children began today. The children died in the blaze at their home in Derby last May. And in the next few minutes, the UN will hold an emergency meeting following North Korea's latest nuclear test. And that's it. I'll be back this afternoon with Alistair Stewart for the IT News at 6:30. For now, the news where you are follows the national weather from everyone here. Bye-bye. Have a good afternoon.